is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour two. Let's keep the good times rolling. It's Live Bet Sunday. I'm Joe Serrallo, and I'm sweating out another review in Toronto suddenly. Andrés Giménez seemed like he stole second base. Excuse for those of you viewing the program, I'm like perched up a little bit because in the quad box, that of course is the least conveniently placed game right now. And the review comes back and he did steal second base. These umpires, I'll tell you, it's two successful challenges for the Blue Jays now, both of which the call on the field would have gone against me. They need to get their heads out of their rear ends. This is why robots and AI are taking their jobs, because these umpires absolutely stink in Major League Baseball. So Dave Bednar in for the five-out save. Andrés Giménez now on second base, Bateman the leadoff hitter, up for Toronto with a 2-2 count. With Giménez's speed and the fact that he's running on contact here with two outs, a base knock, anything from Bateman will inevitably tie this one at two apiece, the Jays leadoff hitter. So we'll see this one pitch from Bednar, and then we'll take it to the guest line. And it's a double. Is that a fair ball? Oh, frig me. It's a foul ball from Bateman. I thought that thing was down the line and right. Well, we'll see what he does, but we will take it to the progressive guest line here and welcome in our guest, Dan Palio from Rotoballer at ThunderDan DFS over on Twitter. Dan, great to have you on, my friend. As you could tell, I'm sweating out this Blue Jays Yankees game. I have a Toronto money line ticket. Anything in baseball that you're sweating out here before we get to some of your props that you like in 5 to 10 minutes for this wave of games coming in?
Not really. Most of my early stuff cashed or already went out the window. So I'm kind of just waiting for these 4 o'clock games here. But it's a good, decent start to the slate so far. So.
Yeah, Bateman goes down 96 miles per hour right down the middle in a lefty's wheelhouse. Oof. And just a tick late on 96. How can you be late on 96 in 2026 when everyone's throwing that?
Right,
so I'll sweat average, out this right. Blue Jays-Yankees game. Yeah, seriously, especially from a righty. I'll sweat this one out as we head to the ninth inning. What do you like coming up? Royals-Angels, something with Noah Cameron that ironically I actually kind of alluded to about 10 minutes ago unknowingly that it was a play that you had.
Yeah, Noah Cameron's been really good lately, and the Angels are an easy team to pick on for strikeouts. I have him over 5.5 strikeouts. I think he's done that like 5 out of the last 7. And offensively, I really like Jack Caglione. He's been smashing righties and facing a pretty bad righty in Ryan Johnson today. So his over total bases, over hits, runs, RBIs, anything you want to get from Jack looks pretty good today because he's just been crushing righties. So I like a little bit on offense from Casey and a little bit on on the mound there as well with Cameron.
Now, there's another K-prop you like in a game I briefly gave some attention to. Rangers-A's up in Sactown. Jacob Lopez has struggled at home this year. Every pitcher seems to struggle up there in Sacramento. What do you like from him, though, in this one?
Yeah, so I like his strikeout prop. It's still at 4.5. And despite the fact that he's really ratcheted up the strikeouts lately, I think he's at 29% over his last 5 starts. I try to dig into the pitch mix a little bit. Like, what did he do differently? He's throwing a cutter a lot more, getting off his fastball, still throwing a ton of sliders to righties. But he's been at like 6, 4, 8, 9, 5 strikeouts. He's really been up there, and he's still sitting at 4.5. I think, you know, a lot of that's baked into when he was pitching at, out of relief or pitching as a starter for games. And now that he's actually stretched out and he's gone 5 or more innings in 4 straight, like, I'm really looking at him against a Rangers team that, frankly, looking at their lineup here, every guy in there, 7 out of 9 guys have 25% strikeout rates or higher. So there's a lot of potential Ks in there, and he's been really good. So it's just an upside play. I think I'm going to take it up to 6.
I love it. He's Dan Palio, covering baseball and football for Rotoballer at ThunderDan DFS over on Twitter. Let's pivot. I mentioned football there. Let's talk a little football, because this is the time of year where, I don't know about you, Dan, I don't really bet the NFL preseason, but I do love to evaluate for the futures market this time of year.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to start with a little controversy. I think we're on opposite sides here. Anyone who watched the show yesterday knows what side I'm on. What do you like or maybe dislike about the Chicago Bears win total sitting at 9.5 coming into the season?
Yeah, it's one of my more, I guess, controversial takes on that. I know the Bears were really good last year. I think what you can look at there, though, is number one, the strength of schedule totally flips. They had one of the easiest schedules in the league last year. They're looking at one of the hardest schedules. So I think there's immediately a potential for two less wins right there, just with two to three, four harder opponents. The other side of that would be the way in which they won games. They won a lot of really fun games, right? But, I mean, how often can you plan on Caleb Williams bringing you back, making a big play at the end of a game, pulling it out, you know, in a tough spot? They won a lot of games like that. So, you know, you even take one or two of those tough wins that come from behind wins out of there, and, you know, you're looking at a team that, you know, when you look at the Pythagorean win there, I don't know how much you look at the Pythagorean wins, but they supposedly should have only won 9 games last year based on, you know, plus minus. So that, I think it's really thin. I think they're still like a 8 or 9 win team, but I think 10 wins is going to be tough in that division. And with everyone now gunning for them, their secret's out. They're a good team. That's not good. They're going to get everybody's best shot this year.
Hey, I get it, man. And honestly, look, you're not the only person who I've heard make that argument. I've heard more people make your argument than mine for loving the over on the Bears. I still think there's something to be said for winning games and knowing how to finish. And my biggest thing with this team, I know the schedule gets tougher. It's a great point on your end. Caleb year 3, Ben Johnson year 2. I don't see these guys getting any worse in their respective roles as their chemistry improves and as they're out there longer. So I'm excited. To me, this is going to be one of the most entertaining teams in the NFL this season. And I'm excited to see what they do. I love this play of yours. It's another total of 9.5. It's a team I love every single season, a coach I love in D'Amico Ryans. Talk to me about the Houston Texans.
Yeah, Houston Texans, I mean, I'm seeing some juice now. You know, I mean, it's getting up there to being like, -130, 140, depending on where you're looking at it. But, I mean, if you were to grab it a month ago, you could have got it closer to even money. Listen, this defense is elite. They improved the offensive line. They brought in a couple new offensive linemen. They're healthier up front. You know, people are not – I'm not a huge C.J. Stroud guy, but I think people are thinking of that terrible playoff performance with recency bias. He was not all that bad, and he's not a bad quarterback. I think he'll bounce back. And David Montgomery brings a real steady veteran presence there. I think they're going to ride him. He's one of my favorite player props, like over 850 rush yards. It's like, to me, it's like free. If he's their starter and stays healthy, he'll smash that too. So, yeah, the Texans are easily a 10-win team. They're the best team in that division. And I think they're kind of a fun, like, Super Bowl bet too, if you want to bet on a team just getting hot at the right time. I mean, they have the defense to do. They were a game away last year, and they probably should have been, you know, it probably should have been closer if it wasn't for Stroud just playing, you know, terribly in that game against New England.
Yeah, the O-line was also horrendous. And you know, again, that's still a concern of mine with them is the O-line. I think if Stroud has time, you could see rookie Stroud again. And you know, you hit every nail on the head when it comes to that defense. One thing you said, though, that I'm curious about, best team in that division. Would you rather take them now with where the juice stands? You mentioned over 9.5 is -130, -140 at some shops now. Would you rather take +110 to win the division, or do the Jacksonville Jaguars give you pause there? Talk to me about that division bet and the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, the Jags, I got at 8.5, by the way, and now they're up to 9.5. So that seemed stupid low when that came out. But I think you can get them over 9.5. There you go, plus money, right? Over, I'm 8.5 there. But I think you can find them over 9.5 for plus money at some books. And I like the Jaguars a ton. They technically overperformed a little bit against their Pythagorean wins, but I still really like the fact that they're, you know, another year under Cohen, bringing pretty much everybody back on offense. Tutin is not a step down at all from ATN, maybe even better at running back. And the defense, they had a really good defense too. People forget they were like top 5, top 6 defense. So I would not bet on Houston to win the division. I think the division is a toss-up between those two teams, but whoever loses the or whoever doesn't win the division is likely a wild card team, and both could be dangerous in the playoffs. I think the AFC is just wide open. The traditional powers of Baltimore and Buffalo and KC, those teams have really come back to the pack, and these young ascending teams, Houston and Jacksonville, I think are right in the mix. Obviously Denver and New England too. All these younger teams are right there in the mix.
Yeah, I think, you know, the NFC is probably just like last year, more dominant than the AFC. But to your point, the AFC could be more entertaining because it really is more wide open. Dan, you've got a ton of great futures here. If you're okay with it, I would love to keep you. We're 2 minutes away from the break. I would love to get into a couple more of these on the other side if you have the time. But one that I want to hit right now, because he's in every news cycle currently, is Jaden Daniels. So with about 90 seconds to go, Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. Are you worried about these off-field distractions, about his mom, about the number five with LSU? Every Twitter joke out there has to do with the number five. My New York Mets the other night won a game 4-1, and they tweeted out, "We stopped at 4 out of respect for Jaden Daniels." What are your thoughts on the Commanders, and are you a little worried about all of these off-field distractions lately with him just acting like a spoiled child?
Well, yeah, and if you watch the Netflix show, like, you saw the mom in action, you know the mom's behind a lot of this. I don't think it's – I think we're far enough out from where we have a couple weeks for this to blow through. Maybe it's going to be a thing week one. But after a while, you know, it comes down to football. He obviously makes them a better team. I don't think they're – I think they are never – they're probably not likely to get back to that NFC championship level from 2 years ago. That was pretty much a miracle run for them. But they're better than 7.5 wins. I have them winning, you know, 8-9 games this year, as long as he's healthy. If he's obviously he's healthy, not healthy, then they're, you know, potentially a 5-win team. But the fact they brought in Diggs now, the fact that they got, you know, some weapons for him, Chigakonkwo tight end, there's definitely some stuff around him. Rashad White as a good receiving running back. I think they'll definitely be upgraded offensively. And if they can be even a little bit better defensively, they'll be competitive and they'll probably, you know, win some games. I don't have them winning the NFC by any means. I still have the Eagles winning that division, but I think they'll be competitive.
They are a high variance team. I could see it going really well or blowing up. But talent-wise, to your point, I like their roster. More Dan, more of myself, more Live Bet Sunday on the other side. I'm Joe Cirillo. Don't go anywhere.
Sunday on VSEN, the sports betting network.
Live Bet Sunday rolls on. I'm Joe Cirillo, and we've got action in Major League Baseball. Jackson Churio just launched a home run, foul by about 2 feet. So things almost went awry for Scooble there. Churio's up with one on, one out as the Brewers-Dodgers game is underway. Cubs are threatening. They've cut that 3-0 lead to 3-2. Tigers threatening, down 1 against the White Sox in the bottom of the 8th, and the Jays have the tying run on and a 3-1 count with none out to Alejandro Kirk, who just walked. So the Jays have the winning run on base, tying run on second, and we will monitor loads of great baseball action as the show continues. But our incredible guest, Dan Paglio, is nice enough to stick around through the break. Of course, does a great job covering baseball, football, and hoops, does it all for Rotoballer at ThunderDanDFS on Twitter, because there were two more NFL win totals I wanted to touch on with him. So, Dan, thank you so much for sticking around, man. And we just closed out with the Commanders there in the last segment. Let's talk about another team in that division. The headlines last week from joint practices between the Cowboys and the Rams read, "Dallas dominates Rams in joint practice." That means nothing to me. What are your thoughts on Dallas dominating the Rams in joint practice? And what are your thoughts on the Dallas Cowboys going into this season?
Yeah, I think everyone wants to make Dallas happen. I know that I think, you know, they're a great team for fantasy football. Like, we love bet. We love betting. We love sports. We love, you know, stats. I think we get confused with, like, hey, Dak Prescott is really good versus Dak Prescott can put up a lot of yards. And yes, CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens and all this stuff. I get it. They have a high octane offense. They're going to score some points. I still don't understand why we should be convinced that they're better on defense or that they're going to stop anybody defensively. And they have a, you know, they play in a tough division. They have a relatively tough schedule. They were a 7-win team. Their win total should have been 7.7, 8 wins last year. So they really didn't underperform versus their point spreads and their plus minus. I just don't see where they improved anywhere to make us think that they're, you know, two or three full wins better than they were last year. I think they're just a pretty mediocre team. We just confuse the fun of their offense and all the points that they score with them being an actual good football team.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue against that. I think they got marginally better on defense. I like the Caleb Downs pick. I like that. I believe each of their first three picks went to defense. And with Prescott, it always comes down to health. But it's such a question mark with him on an annual basis. This is not a team I'm getting behind. And You know, if they do find a way to eclipse that win total, it's probably going to be on the hook there. And that's kind of their ceiling, right? It seems like, is 10-7, a 6 or a 7 seed. Yeah. And you never really want to put a lot of faith or money on a team whose ceiling is maybe just, you know, the other side of their win total by a half a win. So I like the breakdown there. And then this one intrigues me the most. And this is what I really wanted you to stick around and discuss with me. The Atlanta Falcons have an interesting win total, because we all know they've got tremendous skill position players in London and Pitts and Bijan. Last year's defense was actually really good, but that defense took a hit. Last week, James Pierce Jr. got suspended 8 games. Some people call it a big suspension. I think it's kind of light. I think he should be headed to trial, not headed on a 2-month vacation. But how does that impact a win total that has bounced between 6.5 and 7.5 in a weak division? How does the James Pierce news alter your handicap of the Atlanta Falcons? What do you do with this team now?
So I originally really liked the over, and I thought 6.5 was really stupid low, and it's just almost an, not certainly an auto over bet, but you know, things would have to go really wrong for them to not win 7 games, right? When you already mentioned their skill guys, their obvious question is like quarterback, right? We don't know what we're going to get from Michael Penix and how healthy he's going to be. We don't know if Tua has anything left in the tank, right? If he's even going to be any good. We have Cooper Rush as the third option. I do think that the offense could be considerably worse. They didn't really bring any. They obviously drafted a receiver, but they didn't bring in anybody else to really help out the big three of Pitts and Robinson in London. And then you mentioned the defense. Like, that was something that kept them in games. They, you know, the offense was not very good last year. The defense kept them in games. And, you know, Pierce is a huge miss for them. So, I mean, I have concerns. I'm worried. The division got better. I'm not big on Carolina, but I think the Saints are going to be much better. I like them over 7.5 wins. I think Tampa Bay, as long as they're healthy, is going to be much better. That, you know, they had a real down season last year. So their strength of schedule looks favorable, but I think that's partially due because, you know, there's 4 games against Tampa and the Saints that they're factoring in based on last year's records, when I think both teams will be better. So, you know, I still think they get the 7 wins, but it's certainly not as comfortable betting the over as I was maybe a month ago before, you know, a lot of this news came out.
Yeah, the Saints are better, and you're getting a pissed off Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay. That's never good for the rest of the NFC South. it's a tricky handicap now with this James Pierce news. You know, how will he be received when he does come back? This is a guy who had the world by the you know what. And now at 22 years old, he's become a distraction and a question mark instead of celebrated for being just a terrific pass rusher. But Dan, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much for sticking around. It was fun talking ball. I'm excited for this NFL season, and even more so after chatting with you.
Sounds good, man. Thanks again for having me.
That's Dan Paglio. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at ThunderDanDFS. Check out the great work he does over with RotoBaller. Hey guys, I do want to remind you that with 20 leagues out there, if you're looking for the place that has one mission, it's Just Win Bets, baby. They're your premier source for daily sports betting picks. They break down the data so you can bet with confidence across the entire sports calendar. So scan that QR code on your screen, or for those of you listening, whether it's SiriusXM Channel 158 or our various affiliates around the nation, go to justwinbetsbaby.com today and start betting smarter with Just Win Bets, baby. The name says it all. It's Live Bet Sunday. I'm Joe Cirillo, hanging with you through a busy slate of Major League Baseball games. And oh, baby, we're tied up in Toronto. Who doesn't love that? What do we have, a sack fly there from Ernie Clement? As I was doing the read, naturally, it happens. And looking like it was a fly ball to left center from Clement. Jays had second and third. That was huge. They had second and third on a wild pitch from Bednar. I don't know if it was a wild pitch or a pass ball. Actually, I'll try to be it was a wild pitch. They got second and third, one out. And now we are tied in Toronto. Only thing better than being tied in Toronto is being sleepless in Seattle, which the Mariners fans, I think, are every time Brian Wu takes the bump on the road. We'll get to that game later because he stinks on the road this year. Shohei Ohtani leads off against Logan Henderson with a single to right field. And that's how the bottom of the first will start. Brewers got first and second off Schuble. Couldn't capitalize. Churio's ball, I mentioned it, that foul home run, just like 5 feet to the left of the foul pole out there in Dodger Stadium. What's Okamoto going to do? Looks like it's a grounder to short. Jays and Yanks, extra innings. Here we go. Extra innings were not kind to me yesterday with the Tampa-Baltimore game, but we are headed to the 10th. David Bednar blows the five-out save opportunity. Tough thing to do, asking a closer to get five. And we'll see if the Jays can complete the sweep in extras against the Yankees. Vargas for the White Sox. How about Miguel Vargas? I feel like he's the most quiet 28 home runs this year in Major League Baseball. Just gave him a little insurance up in Motown. 7-5 White Sox, top of the ninth. And Randall Grichuk hitting, who got cut, I want to say, by the Yankees earlier this year, wasn't hitting a lick, has an OPS over 840 with the White Sox. He's hitting cleanup for the first place Chicago White Sox. Marlins Reds was nothing in the eighth. It's 4-1 in the ninth now. The runs have poured on. So Miami up and still threatening with first and third and two outs for the Marlins here in the top of the ninth. Freddie Freeman has moved up a spot in the lineup. Dodgers did it yesterday after his day off Friday. Doing it again today, going back-to-back lefties against some imposing right-handed starters in Mizorowski and now Henderson. So making their lives difficult. Dodgers had been going Ohtani, Pajes, Freeman, really since like mid-May because of the incredible start Andy Pajes had this season. But now, I feel like we haven't seen this much. Last 2 days, it's Ohtani and Freddie back-to-back leading off, and that is just a gauntlet. He got under that one to left field. So that'll be a flyout. Ball actually carried further than I thought it would. And Ohtani teases the left fielder with a couple steps off the bag at first, but he's going nowhere. So Henderson, 10 pitches in. We don't have the strikeout yet. Of course, we're waiting on six of them from Logan Henderson. Last time he took on the Dodgers back in May, he had seven of them, and he's pitched since May 1st to the tune of better than 11 Ks per nine. But it's early, and he had a couple of future Hall of Fame left-handed bats to start with Ohtani and Freddie. So 10 pitches in, Shohei's on first, Freeman is out, Andy Pajes is up. And this would be a great spot for Logan Henderson to get his first strikeout. It really is interesting watching him pitch. And I love this because, you know, this is the kind of stuff, like, I live for pitching. I'm a complete geek when it comes to this stuff. As a three-run homer by Javier Sanoja puts the Marlins up 7-1. But you have a righty in the year 2026 who doesn't really exceed 95 with his fastball, doesn't throw a slider or a curveball, and he's pitching to a sub-3 ERA. Watching Logan Henderson pitch is a blast, and he's got Pajes in 0-2 count. Let's see if we can rack up some Ks on the other side. I'm Joe Cirillo. It's Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the sports betting network.
You know, I talked earlier in the program about John Schneider with a lackluster managerial performance for the Blue Jays in this potential, you know, sweep scenario here at home against the Yankees. He brought in Brendan Little with an ERA up near 10 in 16 appearances this year and an inherited runner on second. That runner scored from Cease's double he allowed to George Lombard. Then he goes to Paul Sewald with the ERA north of 6. Well, the Blue Jays tie it. They send it to extras. We, of course, have the Jays money line here. And after a ground out to start the 10th, with a man on third and first base open and one out, Braden Fisher, the righty on the bump, instead of walking Ben Rice and setting yourself up with a potential double play, they pitch to Ben Rice, who was 0-for-4 on the day, and he sends one 440 feet halfway to Quebec, and the Yankees lead Toronto 4-2. John Schneider has had a terrible managerial performance today for the Blue Jays, as they probably will miss out on a sweep. So let's take a break from baseball, and let's talk football as we head over to the Progressive Guest Line. Welcome in our college sports expert from Action Network, our friend Michael Calabrese, into the show at East Breeze on Twitter. Michael, how are you today, my friend? I'm obviously not doing that well. I hope you're having a better Sunday than me.
As we were just saying off air, I don't know how you do it to yourself with regular season baseball. The swings are just too much for me. Like, give me a nice Tuesday night Conference USA game to sweat out between two teams that have no chance of going bowling. I'll take that 10 times out of 10 before I have to rely on a manager going to a bullpen, a guy who hasn't pitched in 13 days, serving up home runs. Like, you're a braver man than me.
Yeah, it's the result of a lot of self-loathing, Michael. I had a choice, therapy or betting day-to-day on baseball, and I chose the latter, unfortunately. Let's talk some college football futures here. This is a team that a lot of people appear to be kind of down on this year. It's year one, a new head coach. It's a loaded SEC. But you like LSU? What's going on with the Tigers down in Baton Rouge that has you paying attention to them?
Well, let's start. Joey Freshwater, Lane Kiffin, whatever you want to call him. You want to call him the Portal King. He did his magic again this year. He had the number one transfer portal class by a country mile. If you look at Brent Ciancia, Pick Six Previews does a phenomenal job with his offseason publication. He pointed out that their class had 29% more blue chippers than the second best class in the country. And they didn't just scatter, spray and pray with some of the NIL money. They went in a targeted fashion to the three most important positions in football, at least in my opinion: edge rusher, left tackle, quarterback. They got the number one recruit at all three of those positions. And when you look at what they have offensively, Sam Leavitt is surrounded by five stars really at every skill position. Tre'Davious Green at tight end, it may be the biggest mismatch in the SEC. At 6'7", he's going to be a red zone weapon. They're going to find a way to get him probably twice as many targets as he had last year. Then you look at the receiving core. They bring in all Big 12 Jace Brown. They bring in the big body Jackson Harris from Hawaii, who is another red zone threat. I think there's an opportunity for this offense to sing immediately. And what's also interesting is that this is not 1998. You're not trying to make the BCS. A single loss doesn't kill you. The 12-team playoff, particularly with a schedule that's as rugged as LSU's is this year, they can lose two games and easily, comfortably go into the playoff. So it's just about being healthy, playing your best football later in the season. With that much room for error, two mulligans, I think this team is going to get there. And I brought up the fact that Lane Kiffin does an incredible job recruiting, not just to players either. He brings Charlie Weiss Jr., his play caller from Ole Miss, who made that offense, you know, work at one of the highest levels in the entire country last year. But he was also able to retain Blake Baker as his defensive coordinator. And when I look at what they have this year, particularly in the secondary, DJ Pickett, I don't care if he wears Jaden Daniels' number or not, this guy is probably going to be in contention. Thorpe Award, you know, an All-American status. They have dudes everywhere on this defense. I understand that the SEC is very deep, but at 22-1, where you can get them to win the national title right now, I think that is simply mispriced. I think a part of it is the noise and the chatter around Kiffin. Obviously, their early return to Oxford in week three is going to be one of the most publicized games of the last decade in college football. I think we're overlooking just how good and how high of a ceiling this Bayou Bengal team could have this fall.
I love the analysis there. And, you know, as I look at this schedule, it's a tough one. But outside of Ole Miss and Tennessee, a couple of road games there, they do get most of their tough opponents at home: A&M, Alabama, Texas. And that could certainly behoove them when it comes to, like you said, just making a 12-team field, not necessarily worrying about the old BCS where you got to be top two. I want to get your thoughts on this, Michael, really quick. I mentioned LSU-Bama November 7th. I got invited. One of my dearest childhood friends is getting married November 7th. Now, this is a guy who graduated the University of Michigan. That is the day Michigan plays Michigan State. It's LSU-Bama. He is a huge football fan. He is an avid sports fan. We got Texas Tech, West Virginia. I can't wait to see a total of 72.5 in that one. What are your thoughts on fall weddings? I mean, this is one of my closest childhood friends. What do I do here, Michael?
I'm going to give a shout out to the podcast, The Solid Verbal. They came up with this phrase, the window of opportunity. You have to look at the kickoff times for all the games and be able to, you know, construct a game plan. When are you ducking out? Are you showing up to a certain pre-wedding event, maybe a little bit later, or you're there just to show face, and then all of a sudden you're in the back with the kitchen workers watching, you know, some of these games. You have to get strategic, and you're certainly not going to bail on your friends. But I think this is an opportunity for a little MacGyver, a little bit of ingenuity. Find different ways. You're watching on your phone. You're watching in the kitchen. You're sneaking out for 10, 15 minutes to sneak some football in. There's ways to do it. And I think if you do it right, you can both be the man for your buddy. And also, you can have a lot of fun, kind of just Mission Impossible style, stuffing in all this college football. Because you're not going to say no to the wedding, but also there's so many games. It's really going to come down to when these kickoff times are and when the wedding, you know, in the church, whether it's indoor, outdoor, when the reception is, the cocktail hour. Something's got to be left on the cutting room floor. But like I said, just show face, make sure that you're memorable, and then you can sneak away a little bit to watch some college football.
going to be really hard chatting up a single bridesmaid while I'm sweating Texas Tech, West Virginia, you know, garbage time points in the fourth quarter. But we'll see. I like your plan there, Michael. I'm probably going to stick to your game plan. We'll see if we can make it happen. Talk to me about another long shot you like to make the college football playoff, a group of five team, not a power conference team. Who do you like to potentially represent the mid-majors?
So for those who do not focus on the group of six, you may think to yourself that these teams aren't all that valuable, but there's a ton of betting value in these markets. And when you start with a program like Memphis, they're one of the most well-heeled programs in the country and certainly in the G6 because of all the FedEx money that has flown into this program in the last 3 to 4 years. They just got a $25 million cash infusion for all of their sports, but the lion's share of that has gone to their football program. And what have they done with it? They hired Charles Huff, who's a rising star. He comes from the Nick Saban coaching tree. All he's done is win. He's won double-digit games at Marshall, won the Sun Belt, also upset Notre Dame about 5 years ago. Goes to Southern Miss for a single season. That program had completely bottomed out. Goes from a 1-11 season. He shows up. They go 7-6 with a transfer-heavy roster. He's up to the same tricks again here at Memphis. He goes in. He gets two incredible coordinators. This is probably my favorite combo hire of offensive and defensive play callers in the country. Kevin Decker, all he did at Old Dominion was lead the Monarchs to a 10-win season, their first time at the FBS level, turned Colton Joseph, their quarterback, into a dual-threat machine, over 1,000 yards rushing, 13 rushing touchdowns. He goes off to the Wisconsin Badgers to help that program. Defensively, they bring in Lance Guidry, who was the defensive coordinator for Charles Huff at Marshall. His teams were always absolutely fanatical about creating havoc. 78 sacks in 2 years as a defensive coordinator. And what they've done is they've given him weapons to work with in their front. Jamon Tapp is one of the best pass rushers in the country. They opened up their checkbook. They made sure that he signed on the dotted line. He's good for double-digit sacks this year. And the last piece of it, at 13-1 to make the college football playoff, they got the two quarterbacks that I think, I'm not quite sure who they're going to play. They may play both. Aaron Nolan, a former four-star who's at Ohio State and South Carolina, rolls into town. And this dual-threat D2 star, Marcus Stokes, who is a really great runner. Whoever wins this job, I think there's an opportunity for Memphis to have a top 20 offense if everything goes right because of their talent. And I really believe that this, you know, Tiger team is going to win the American. And if they do, they're going to be right there in the conversation at the end of the regular season for that auto bid from the G6.
Well, Michael, I'm sold on this Memphis team. And certainly, you know, we look at mid-major, group of six, depending on college football, college hoops. Those smaller schools or, you know, not power conference schools that have a lot of money, it usually translates to wins. Look at last year's Cinderella and March Madness, High Point. They've got more money than God out there at that university, and they were your Cinderella to the Sweet 16, right? Usually in today's NIL day and age, money does equate to wins in college sports. 30 seconds or less, I'm going to ask you, after Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana, next Big Ten team with the best chance to make the playoffs, who is it?
I kick myself every year because you can talk yourself into USC, but their offense, their quarterback play, what Lincoln Riley has been able to do, I trust him that he's going to have himself a top 20 offense. The mystery box for USC and the reason why I like them and I take a gamble on them being in just the cut below Ohio State and Indiana is their defense. They go out and they get Gary Patterson, a defensive savant. He'll be in the College Football Hall of Fame because of his chops as both a head coach, but mainly as a defensive mastermind. All they have to be is top 50 defensively, and they're going to win double digits and be in the race in the Big Ten.
Follow him on Twitter at EastBreeze, Michael Calabrese, college sports expert over at the Action Network. Great stuff, man. I appreciate the time. When we come back, we've got a whole new slate of Major League Baseball games to bet on live. A lot of West Coast action on the other side with your West Coast guy, Joe Cirillo, here on Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
Live Bet Sunday continues. We are humming along here with me, Joe Cirillo, for another hour plus. Up until 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern. And then I'll hand it off to Ben Stevens, who you'll be hearing a lot of on other places with myself this week. Ben and I are about to go on quite the stretch of working together at Joe Cirillo on Instagram, at the Joe Cirillo on Twitter. And you can see Ben and I all week long together on air. But he'll be taking over for four more hours, I should say, of Live Bet Sunday after this. And Milwaukee, do we have a grand slam attempt from Churio? It's to the track and then in the glove of Andy Páez. Tarek Skubal is struggling out there at Dodger Stadium. His third start with the Dodgers, second at home at Chavez Ravine. And it has been a laborious two innings for Skubal, who is up near 50 pitches. Only one run for Milwaukee to show for it as they stranded him loaded. I believe they stranded two on in the first, and the base is juiced right there in the second. But Skubal's having to work his tail off. And two innings, 48 pitches. They trail 1-0 as it'll be Logan Henderson back to the mound for the bottom of the second. I mentioned earlier, I said, let's see if Henderson can get the strikeout on Andy Páez. We were going to a break. It was an 0-2 count. Well, he got Páez and Max Muncy back-to-back. That changeup is wicked. It is 83 miles per hour, and it moves about 20 inches. It is a wicked changeup from Logan Henderson. So he's got two strikeouts. We need six, and he's through an inning of work on, I believe, 18 pitches. This Giants-Rockies game might as well be being played at Coors Field right now. It's up in San Fran. But in the top of the third just started, by the way. So no runs have been scored in the third. After two innings, it was 5-4 Giants. Colorado went down 1-0 in the first, put up a four spot in the second. San Fran answered with a four spot in the bottom of the second. So that was your play with Tidwell and Gabriel Hughes. It was clearly the over with two guys who had 56 and a third combined innings of work this year and not a lot of impressive numbers to show for it. 5-4 in the top of the third. Up in San Francisco, a slugfest, if you will, between the Giants and the Rockies. Let's update some other scores. I wish I knew what the Philadelphia Phillies' biggest odds were on the money line when they were down 5-0 to the Minnesota Twins earlier in the top of the sixth inning. It was 5-0 Twins after five. The Phillies now lead at 7-5. If you have a Phillies money line ticket that you took live, tweet at us at VSIN Live, at the Joe Serralo. I want to see it because the Philadelphia Phillies have battled all the way back and they're fighting in a tough wild card race in the National League right now. Alec Bohm with a 3-run homer in the sixth and got an RBI single in the eighth, a run scored on a throwing error. De La Cruz followed up with a 2-run knock. The Phillies piecing them together here. As a rough start from Andrew Painter is now forgotten about. Let's just see if the Phillies bullpen, which has been erratic and awful this year, can hold on in Minnesota. The Pirates lead at 7-3. They're in a rain delay against Boston in the top of the seventh. That game far from over. Connor Wong, the catcher hitting ninth for the Sox, had a 3-run shot in the fifth. It was once 7-0, now 7-3 with a rain delay. And we've seen funky things happen coming out of rain delays in baseball. So Boston, I would not say that they're dead yet against the Pittsburgh Pirates. You can get them about 15-1 if you've got the guts to do so. Logan Henderson, you hate to see that. Had an 0-2 count to Mookie Betts to start the bottom of the second. And just like Shohei started the bottom of the first, Betts puts a base knock into right field. Henderson went high fastball, tried to get Betts to chase. It wasn't high enough. And Mookie, with just some professional hitting there, takes the fastball opposite field. So Kyle Tucker will step in, down 1-0 with Mookie on first and none out here. Kyle Tucker at home this season, they just flashed the graphic, which means naturally he's going to hit a home run here. He's hitting .192 at Dodger Stadium. He's missed games so far this series because Dave Roberts says he just wants to give him a break at home because he's been so bad at home. Hitting .192 with two home runs at Dodger Stadium, making $60 million this season. But the Dodgers are so good, no one can cry or complain about that contract because they're still winning games, two games behind these Brewers for the one seed in the National League. So Tucker works the first two pitches, actually showed bunt on the first pitch, but it's a 2-0 count to Tucker here, and we'll see how Henderson fights back. He's at 24 pitches. We're a third of the way to our K prop. He's got two. We need six. We are watching every at bat like it's our last, especially after that disastrous Blue Jays finish. That managing by John Schneider was just atrocious. And that's 2 days in a row now. And I'm sorry, I'm a little pissed. 2 days in a row where my favorite bet of the day loses in extra innings. Tampa -1 yesterday, Toronto money line today. Both fall in 10 innings. And that is just really damn frustrating. But we're not going to harp on it. We're going to try to get home with this Logan Henderson K prop as he's battled back from trailing 2-0 in the count to a 2-2 count. And after a pickoff attempt with Mookie at first, we'll see if he can put Tucker down like he did Muncy from the left side just last inning. Another way we can look to make money, the college football season that's less than 2 weeks away. Folks, it is almost here, and betting it blind is a losing strategy. Get the VSiN College Football Betting Guide free with a VSiN Pro subscription. It's got previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's sharpest minds. But that's not all. VSiN Pro also gets you the NFL Betting Guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, and more, like 24/7 video, so you can watch me on the VSiN Watch app. Try it today for just $9.99 or lock in a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. So Henderson had Tucker with a 2-2 count, and he couldn't put him away. Got a pop-up to shallow right field, and then first pitch a double play from Tommy Edmonds. So no strikeouts that inning, but on the bright side, kept the pitch count pretty low. I think that was only about a 9-pitch inning from Henderson. So he's at 27 pitches, 2 strikeouts through 2 innings. We need 6 strikeouts. Right now, that would put him on pace for about exactly 6. We'll see with 8-9-1 due up for the Dodgers if he can get another 1 or 2 in the third. But we're going to sweat it out together. Logan Henderson at plus 110 over 5.5 strikeouts. Hey, hour 3 is going to be like power hour on this program. We're starting off hot. We've got great guests. George Cirillo, top of the hour. That's right. You know it. You love it. It's everyone's favorite segment. It's Father Knows Bets, just about 5 or 6 minutes away from it here on Live Bet Sunday. And then we're getting 2 Cirillos, top of the hour. We're getting 2 Joes halfway through. Joe De Leon is going to join us, host of the Ruffino and Joe Show on 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports. Going to join us halfway through the final hour as we look ahead to some college football futures. I know Joe is just salivating, thinking of a week 0 matchup between Hawaii and Stanford in 13 days from now. By the way, full transparency, right? Like, the 3 sports that I do best, that I bet best, that keep me going year-round 365, Major League Baseball, NFL, college basketball, right? NBA, I really don't bet it until the playoffs, save for maybe a half a dozen spots in the regular season. Just too unreliable to me with the injury reports and whatnot. And then college football, I heat up as the season goes on, but I start really slow, especially with the new NIL age because of all the transfer portal stuff and the new look rosters. I start really slow on college football. Last year, I took Hawaii plus the points against Stanford. It got home. Haven't decided yet. We're 13 days away. I'll probably decide as we enter, you know, within a week of week 0. But I'm thinking I go back to the well on Hawaii plus the points against Stanford this year. I'm looking forward to that game. And you know, I know Stanford's got some new look faces in there running the program, coaching the program, but it's just been a few down years for the Stanford Cardinal. And you get Hawaii going up there, catching 5.5, catching nearly a touchdown. I know Hawaii is a team, it's much more favorable to bet them at home than they are on the road because they have the most extensive travel in the country. But I think there's something about this high octane Hawaii offense that could hang in there against Stanford. And I think 5.5 points just might be too many for that week 0 matchup. Maybe we'll pick Joe's brain about it in about 30 minutes. But in about 5 minutes, Father Knows Bets, George Cirillo joining the show. I can't wait. We're talking MLB futures, NFL futures. He's got to play for Sunday Night Baseball that, if you've been paying attention, I may have alluded to earlier in the program. Great pitching matchup on paper. Hunter Brown, Brian Wu. Also, realistically speaking, a better pitching matchup in 2024 or 2025 than it is here in 2026. So we'll see his angle on Sunday Night Baseball. Mariners, Astros. The Mariners, by the way, own the Astros. In like their last 12 games, I think Seattle's 10-2 against them. So will that trend continue, or is it a trend worth fading today? Find out on the other side. It's going to be not one, but 2 Cirillos coming at you. Live Bet Sunday here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.